Welcome to Water and Air, the podcast trailblazing the way for senior leaders and managers in law to help create culture and capability that allows themselves and their teams to shine. Just like water and air, it's the ordinary that creates extraordinary results. And these things can make all the difference between thriving and failing in the world of law. Join us as we uncover and share just what these ordinary things are and how to make them work for you. By Parul Patel, powered by Fuel and Move, your career gym for lawyers. For more information, click the link in the show notes below. Welcome to part one of a four-part series on the theme of team togetherness. I'm delighted to be able to share from the Summer of Sport webinar that Fuel and Move hosted last year as we caught up on 2020 sport in 2021. And in this episode of Water and Air, we'll hear from an esteemed panel of athletes, including Olympic champions, about the features and benefits of team togetherness and what it kind of means to them. Part two focuses on the practicalities of how to create that team togetherness where you are. Part three takes a deep dive into one of the power tools for building team togetherness. And part four explores details that are often excused in the corporate world, but would be unheard of in modern sport. And throughout this four-part series, you'll be hearing from five sporting panelists. So we've got solicitor and double Olympic medalist Georgie Twigg. Georgie represented Team GB hockey before joining Bird and Bird to practice law. Then we've got former head of legal and special advisor to the International Olympic Committee from 1984 to 2020, and four-time Canadian national wrestling champion Howard Stubb. If you'd like to hear more about his career journey and the insights that you might be able to apply to your own career, head over to Live Laugh Law Talk Show on YouTube, where Howard shares the ups and downs of his career. Third, we've got a solicitor and former professional footballer, Josh Lowe. Josh is a commercial property solicitor at CMS, having studied law at night school during the second half of his 17-year professional football career. We've got Associate General Counsel from Nike, Erin Potempa, responsible for supporting North America sports marketing. Another fascinating career journey there to unpack, and hopefully we'll get her to share on Live Laugh Law at a future date. And finally, we've got speaker and people performance expert and double Olympic champion, Mark Hunter. So let's dive straight into what the panelists had to share about what does togetherness mean to them and why is it so important? So welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining the conversation. I'm just honored that we can have this conversation about togetherness. And it seems like a particularly apt moment, given the Olympics start in 3 days and given the performance of teams like England, Denmark, Wales in the Euros that just happened and the incredible demonstration of team togetherness by each of those. Like any Fuel and Move experience, we want to help you on your better version of success journey. And for today's session, that means that we hope you'll take away in three different dimensions. First of all, hope it just inspires you to take some of your existing knowledge and it just be a little nudge, a cajole to turning it into action. Second of all, maybe like I'd describe it like a tall glass of cold water after a hot summer run. Hope that it's just going to allow you to find out and explore things that you've always wanted to find out and explore about the subject and how you can put it into practice. And finally, hopefully some of the insights will be inspiring enough to be that light bulb moment, almost like when Steve Jobs introduced the world to the iPod. So taking away things that you didn't know or didn't even know that it existed. I wanted to kick off with Howard because Howard's from a sport of wrestling. And until I'd spoken to him, I didn't really put wrestling and any element of team togetherness together. So Howard, can you explain to us a little bit about, you know, what's wrestling and togetherness and team? What's the connection there? Because it's like, it's just you on the mat, right?
Yes. When you're competing, it's you against your adversary. In that sense, obviously, it's very different from a team sport where you're depending on others. It's also different in the sense that you're actually touching your opponent as opposed to running beside the person or lifting weights vis-a-vis the other person who lifts more. But teamwork does play an important part. It's important to be close with your coach. It's especially important to be close with your teammates. I mean, it's just the spirit in practice. I mean, we're spending hours and hours practicing. And whenever you're practicing with other wrestlers. So it's really great to have a good team spirit because that spurns you on. I mean, if there's winners on your team, people who have a good attitude, it rubs off on you. If there's negative people, it could rub off on you negatively. So even in an individual sport, and especially wrestling, because you need other wrestlers to practice with, teammanship or togetherness is still very important.
Great. Thanks, Howard. And how does that resonate with other panelists of their experience? Because you played traditionally team sports. We've got Josh in from football, Georgie in hockey. Mark, in rowing, you were part of a team of two. Let me pick on Josh for now, and we'll go through the rest. Like, can you explain, like, what was the reach and what was your experience of togetherness as a footballer?
Yeah, I mean, see, Howard mentioned, you know, his performance was individual, but he relied on his coaches and his team in terms of the structure and how he trained and how he built towards competition. I mean, in a football environment, it's, you know, we're a team, we're together all the time, much in the same way as you are in a law firm. You spend more time with your teammates than you do with your family most of the time. So when you can foster that togetherness, the words that we saw, support, trust that you have in each other, it makes such a difference. And I've played in teams where the team ethic and the teamwork was good, and I've played in teams where it wasn't so good. And you really notice those times when, especially when things don't go so well, that's when you really notice how good your togetherness is and your team ethic. And it can quickly fall apart if you haven't got that. So, yeah, I think I'd echo the points that Harry made in terms of having trust in the teammates, trust in coaches, and them having that trust in you is incredibly important.
One other thing that Howard brought up, and also that I saw in the survey, a word that kept coming up was spirit. And as well, and Howard, you mentioned, you know, how your energy can change if you have people in your group that have different energy, and how your energy can change. And, you know, one thing that when I think about togetherness as well, I think about what's your role on the team and kind of how can you lead from the bench to help change the energy. So you might not be the captain or you might not even be a starter, but you can help shift that energy by leading from the bench.
That's a really good point. And that was a really interesting point, Erin, because sometimes we forget about the less visible members of our team that allow us to operate at our highest performance. Is that something that's shared by the others? Georgie, Mark?
Yeah, I was just going to say, touching on what Howard said as well about the wider team. So obviously, you know, when we were competing in Rio, it was 16 players that were representing Team GB. But actually, you know, back at our training base, it had been 31 girls training day in, day out together, you know, right up until we were on that flight to Rio. And the whole wider support network that sort of gets you to that point plays such a huge role and is so important in that togetherness being there amongst the group and all working towards a collective goal and a collective vision. And, you know, it kind of takes it from everyone contributing to that. And a really successful team is definitely someone that managed to get that complete buy-in from every single person that's involved. And as Erin said, whether they're a key player or not, or whether, you know, they are one of those people that are very unfortunate to not get selected, but have been instrumental in all the training and getting us prepared for the tournament.
One of the interesting things, Georgie, that we've spoken about previously was, you know, how despite that only 16 getting to go to the Olympics, when you got back home, it was, you know, back in with the squad of 32, and you just fell straight back into that team spirit. There wasn't any angst or animosity or separateness when you got back to the camp. Like, how was that created? And were there spells when that didn't happen, or was it always like that?
I think, you know, I'd be naive to say that obviously, you know, around selection, it's always tough because obviously everyone wants to be on that plane heading out to the Olympics. But I think because of everything that we had done as a squad at our training base in the years leading up to the Olympics. You know, you go through everything like day in, day out together. You know, you experience the highs and lows of training and all the meetings and the psychology sessions all together, that actually, you know, those people that have genuinely contributed and can feel that they've been a part of that medal. And I'm sure it is very tough for those watching, you know, when your teammates come back with the medal. But equally, you know, I think a sign of a successful team is that, yeah, when we came back, you know, they were all so proud, and because they felt part of it. And I think that was really key, that we made them feel part of it, because they had been, they'd been instrumental in the success.
And that sounds really nice, something that we'd all want to be a part of. And I can imagine that it's a sense that you would never want to leave that environment. Is that something that is shared amongst all of you, that when you've got that deeper level of togetherness, is that an environment that is very difficult to take yourself away from?
Yeah, I think from my point of view, it's something that I particularly missed when I left football, was that collective drive to achieve certain goals. They're very, in a football team, the goals are very clear. You know, we all knew at the start of the season what we were looking to achieve, you know, promotion or winning a cup or whatever it may be. And you had that collective push and drive towards achieving that from everybody. And that was something which, when I initially came out of football, I missed it, because it was such an intense feeling that you get in sport. And trying to find that again in the legal profession has been different in the way it works. You still have goals and you still set targets and you still have that collectiveness, but definitely in sport it sort of heightens in the way you feel it and try and achieve it.
Mark, can I bring you in, because I know you've got something to share.
Yeah, no, I was just touching on what Josh was saying, that kind of that environment that is kind of created around you as an athlete. So to be honest, as an athlete, you don't really have to think too much. You know, everything's kind of laid on, all the processes are in place. And when you step out of that, that's something very difficult as an athlete, because that structure that you're used to of being a trainer at a certain time, you know, where you're going to go in training camp, where you're competing, pretty much your kind of routine is pretty much mapped out most of the time, or for a 4-year cycle, especially in the Olympics. So that's a huge challenge when you step out of that. But I'm just thinking about the togetherness conversation at the start. And for me, a real good sign of a team or an organization that has great togetherness is if somebody externally comes in, how quickly can you bring them up to speed? It's okay for people that are in that environment, but if you have someone new coming in, can everybody explain the process you have, the culture you have, and really kind of articulate that? Or does it take people time, or do they struggle to step into that? So I think that's always a good way of judging whether, you know, you think you've got it or you have it. So especially for us in sport, when you have injuries or somebody has to step out, you have to potentially bring somebody new in or a spare, and it's how quickly you can bring them up to speed. So togetherness kind of relates to that environment that you create, but you've got to be able to understand that individually as well as a collective team.
A wonderful segue, Mark, because I did want to go into what are the practical impacts of togetherness, and equally, what are the impacts of when that togetherness is slightly less well connected? I think, Georgie, you've got in between the London Olympics and Rio in the middle, right? You hit the lowest low as far as Team GB hockey was concerned. Maybe you can unpack a little bit of the story of how you got there, what was missing, and then how actually you turned that story around. Because to go from a bronze to the lowest point to a gold in a 4-year span, pretty amazing.
Gosh, there was so much to take away from that. And here are some of the insights that stood out to me. So the first one, you know how strong the togetherness is when things are not going well. It's so true, isn't it? Like, you really see the strength of a team, not when things are going really, really well, but when things start to not go so well or according to plan. How do the team members and leader respond? Just want to take a moment to reflect, like, think about where you are right now when things are not going so well in your team. Is there a propensity to look immediately backwards to find who's to blame or what's to blame? Or is the response to redirect that focus to find a way through and then save that conversation around accountability and learning and improvement and the analysis that goes into that to a later point once you're back on track or at the end of the deal, case, or project. So what's your experience? Where are you landing on this? Is your tendency or your team's tendency to look for blame or to look for a way forward? Then this is kind of like a real fundamental point, I think, like a real foundational point. And it's about individual energy and mindset. You know, it's like the saying, one for all and all for one. So that you give your all, no matter where you appear in the structure of the team or what your role is in that team. You know, so often supporting roles are massively undervalued. And we heard from both Georgie and Erin about people who are on the bench or the wider team that supports the team that actually gets selected to go and compete on the world stage. And those supporting roles are as critical to a well-functioning, well-performing team as those who actually take the podium position. So think about the team in which you serve. Can you think of people who are maybe behind the scenes cheerleaders, making sure that they're there with the right energy at the right time to ensure the team can keep moving forward, even when things are starting to look a bit bleak? It could be a partner from a parallel team, a secretary, a trainee. It's not really about the hierarchy, but just about keeping the eyes on the prize of team success. So take a moment. Can you identify the roles of the people in your team? I mean, I'm not talking about their job titles, but what is it that each person brings to the team? Now ask yourself, are people recognized in a way that resonates with them? I mean, not everyone wants to stand up in front of a crowd to receive an award. Some do, some don't. The important thing is to recognize the value that each person brings in a way that they value and that we let them do what lets them be at their best. Something that Riaz Hazi shared with us from the previous episode, I said, you know, we should look at what people can do and then allocate work in a way that enables them to be at their best. And then the next step, I guess, is then recognize and appreciate that in a way that can be received by that person. I mean, we're all different. And it's in sparking the connections between the differences that teams will take you to the next level. And didn't you just love this practical tip from Mark to run a quick health check on your team togetherness by asking an existing member to explain the vision, values, and behaviors, or the culture and processes that you've got to someone who's not part of the team? How well is any member of the team able to onboard a new member, enthusing them with the spirit and practices of that team? So that's it for this part one. Let us know what made you stop, nod, or reflect. We'd love to hear your experiences too. Share your insights about how you've made togetherness come to life in your team. Or as Georgie will share in part two of this four-part series, how to resurrect team togetherness after hitting rock bottom. If you've got some insights or experiences that you can share about that, please do. And on that note, thank you for listening. Until next time, keep sharing and inviting. Thank you for being part of the Fuel and Move community. Make sure you never miss an episode release by subscribing and reviewing the podcast below. Also, leave your questions in the comments box below, and we'll try and answer them in future episodes. For the latest on performance optimization for lawyers, you can visit fuelandmove.com. Looking forward to you joining us next time.